Hi, this is Mike Adams. Thanks for listening to Adams on Agriculture. Join me Monday through Friday for the latest farm and agriculture news from around the world.
Informing America's farmers and ranchers, it's Adams on Agriculture, produced by the American Ag Radio Network. Here's your host, Mike Adams.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Adams on Agriculture. Thank you for joining us. Hope you had a good weekend. Here we are, last week of January already. Thanks for letting us be part of your day. We always appreciate it. Weather, a big story. As we kick off this week, we'll talk with DTM meteorologist Bryce Anderson about the winter weather hitting much of the country. We'll also get a Washington update from Senator Charles Grassley. A lot has changed since the last time we talked with Senator Grassley. We'll get his thoughts on the confirmation process, some Biden action early on in his presidency, of course, biofuels. So a lot to talk about with Senator Grassley coming up, and always lots to talk about with the markets. They are a wild ride these days. We'll talk with Matt Bennett with AgMarket.net a little bit later on. But let's start things off with Spencer Chase from AgriPulse Communications. Spencer, good to talk with you. And let's start with the confirmation process. Some done, some we're still waiting on, including Secretary Vilsack.
Yeah, and kind of interesting to see there. And I think one of the biggest details, one of the biggest reasons that we haven't seen action on Secretary Vilsack's nomination is, you know, for the life of me, Mike, I could not tell you who is currently chairing the Senate Agriculture Committee. I mean, there obviously we have every reason to expect it'll be Michigan Democrat Debbie Stabenow. But until the Democratic and Republican leaders in the Senate are able to come up with some kind of organizing resolution, the Democrats don't officially take chairmanships of committees. And so the committee hearings that we've seen have been sort of co-chaired by the former Republican chair and Democratic ranking member, soon to be chair of those committees. But in this case, the former Republican chair has resigned. And so I would assume as soon as things get sorted out on Capitol Hill in terms of that organizing resolution, we're going to see Secretary Vilsack's nomination move, and move quickly. But it's in a bit of a holding pattern until then.
Yeah, it's interesting because it's expected his will be one of the quickest or smoothest, but yet it seems to be one of the slowest ones to get started.
Yeah, well, and plus we did have some action from the Biden, formerly the Biden transition team, now the Biden administration. When they came in, they said, we really need to get our defense and our homeland security and, our treasury secretary of the highest priority. And in fairness, the Senate has responded to that. We've seen they did confirm Homeland Security and Defense last week. They're going to act today on Treasury. So, it's not like the Senate has just been sitting on its hands, but there's just a lot of things up in the air.
Interesting. Most of agriculture has come out in support of Secretary Vilsack. A couple of noticeable and notable absences from that support, though, would be the National Chicken Council and the National Cattlemen's Beef Association. Those two did not sign the letter of support for Secretary Vilsack.
Right, and it definitely is worth noting, because that letter of support, 120-some-odd organizations in favor, and obviously Secretary Vilsack is a known commodity. And what those commodities know about Secretary Vilsack, they didn't necessarily like. Obviously, those are two groups that represent, organizations and people that are not hugely in favor of things like country of origin labeling or the GPSR rule or Fair Farmer Practices rule, as the Obama administration called it. And those are things that Vilsack was, a big driver behind. And so there's a little bit of concern now, once he is eventually sworn in and confirmed, which we have every reason to believe that he will be, that those are going to be things he's going to push for in the new administration. Obviously they're not going to put out a letter of condemnation, because they do still need to work with the new secretary once he's eventually sworn in, but kind of hedging their bets at this point.
Yeah, interesting, and we'll be following up on that one. All right, so beyond confirmations, two big stories we're watching. Will Congress go through, we're kind of waiting on the Senate now, will they go through with an impeachment trial? And then also, what happens to President Biden's COVID package that he is pushing? So those are two big stories that impact everything else in Congress right now.
Right. And, you know, that's obviously two of the things that are really driving the Senate agenda at that point, or at this point, outside of the confirmation process. And we did see some level of agreements out of the Senate late last week in that they will move to that to the impeachment trial. I mean, once they receive the article of impeachment from the House, they're constitutionally required to do so. But they are going to give the Trump team a little bit of time to prepare its defense. And so we should see, you know, some further action on that once we move into February. The COVID relief package, though, is interesting in that, you know, in theory, Democrats could just band together and pass this by some kind of reconciliation action where they would only need, 50 votes. And they have 50 votes with a tie-breaking vice president vote. But that's also assuming they're going to get every Democratic vote. And if they're going to be passing a COVID relief package, obviously, you know, the Biden administration coming in, preaching unity, preaching bipartisanship and working together, you know, they would love to get Republicans on board with this measure as well. But some of the Republicans they might get, folks like Mitt Romney, Susan Collins, along the more moderate line of the party, have expressed a little bit of concern about the price tag on this package coming in at about $1.9 trillion right now.
Yep, all these are issues we're going to talk with Senator Grassley about here a little bit later, get his thoughts on that. I'm really anxiously watching what happens here early on, Spencer. I felt, when I look back 4 years ago, I thought one of the first things out of the gate would be pass an infrastructure bill, because I thought that was something both sides wanted. They said that they acknowledged was needed, and I thought here will be a chance to get something done in a bipartisan way and get things off, you know, set a positive tone. That did not happen, and we certainly did not have a positive tone the last 4 years. It'll be interesting to see what happens here early on. The impeachment trial could set everything back, really.
Right. Well, and plus, there's, there are going to be, I think, at this point in time, you know, I'm not going to give you a whip count by any stretch of the imagination, but I do think there's going to be some Republicans that are going to be willing to vote, you know, to convict President Trump in that trial. I couldn't give you a number, but I do think there will be some measure of support there. But, you know, just to the point you made about infrastructure, too, there's a lot of areas of, you know, broad bipartisan agreement on Capitol Hill. You know, believe it or not, there is. But it's putting that into legislative text and keeping other, you know, random rider bills from, kind of hitching a ride onto there. So there is agreement, there is bipartisanship, but it's tough to actually see that into legislation sometimes.
Yep, we'll see what kind of tone is set here early on, because as we've seen the last 4 years, that tone can carry for quite some time. Spencer, thank you very much. Good to talk with you.
Always great to chat, Mike.
Take care. Spencer Chase with AgriPulse Communications. You have a lot to talk about with Senator Grassley coming up a little bit later on. What are his thoughts on an impeachment trial? And can they actually get some other things done here early on with the new administration and the new Congress, whether it be on infrastructure or something else? What does he see ahead? And, of course, we'll get his thoughts on the biofuels issue. He was critical of the outgoing Trump EPA. We'll see what he thinks about the incoming EPA administrator. That's coming up a little bit later. Right now, a lot of focus for a lot of folks is on winter weather. We'll talk about that with DTN meteorologist Bryce Anderson up next here on AOA. Hi, this is Mike Adams. You're listening to AOA, Adams on Agriculture. Don't go away. More Adams on Agriculture coming right up. Join us every Tuesday for a Round the Table brought to you by CHS as we discuss how cooperatives support farmers and ranchers and build strong communities. Each week, we'll chat with voices from throughout the cooperative system, from global market access to local expertise. We'll explore how co-op ownership means you own a world of opportunities. Tune in on Tuesdays or visit cooperativeownership.com to learn more.
The landscape of media has changed, and people are more skeptical than ever about where they get their news and information. While major news outlets show decreasing credibility, your local farm radio station still shows strong marks. In a recent survey, farmers rated information from their farm broadcasters as almost twice as reliable as major news outlets. Farm radio continues to be transparent, honest, and trustworthy.
This message brought to you by the National Association of Farm Broadcasting.
Have you checked the box? A celebration of the gifts of organ, eye, and tissue donation. Anyone can check the box and register as a donor, a decision that saves and heals lives. Check the box online, by mail, or at the DMV. Just go to donatelifesd.org to register today and discover inspiring stories of donation from our community.
Do you know how to keep food safe at home?
Clean, separate, cook, and chill.
The easy lessons of clean, separate, cook, and chill will help you protect your family and be food safe. Let's talk about how to separate. First, use different cutting boards for meat, poultry, seafood, and veggies. Raw meat should never touch food that won't be cooked. Then, always keep raw meat, poultry, seafood, and their juices away from other foods in the shopping cart. And store raw meat, poultry, and seafood in a container or on a plate in the fridge so juices won't drip on other foods. Food safety risks at home are more common than most people think. The USDA is your partner in being food safe.
Clean, separate, cook, and chill.
For more information, visit befoodsafe.gov or call 1-888-MP-HOTLINE.
You're listening to AOA, Adams on Agriculture. Hi, this is Mike Adams. You can rely on us for the latest farm and ranch news from around the world.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need to know. Adams on Agriculture. Now, back to Mike Adams.
Well, several parts of the country dealing with some winter weather, snow, sleet, freezing rain. Let's talk about it with DTM meteorologist Bryce Anderson. Bryce, thanks for joining us. How much and how widespread is this winter weather?
Mike, it looks like there's a corridor for snow from about Interstate 70 from Denver east to Indianapolis and then north to U.S. Highway 20. That goes across northern Nebraska, north central Iowa, and then, of course, towards Chicago. You get in that corridor, and there is snowfall that, you know, has varying amounts. I mean, because we know that snow has different amounts depending on where you are within that belt. But parts of north central Kansas could have 4 to 7 inches. Same story in north central Illinois. You've got then 6 to 12 inches in eastern Nebraska into central Iowa and possibly a foot to foot and a half in southeastern Nebraska across southern Iowa and some record snow accumulation for the, you know, for a single event is possible within that heavier kind of sub area, so to speak. So, yeah, it's a big system, biggest snowstorm of the year or of the winter across a pretty good belt of the central part of the country.
Fast moving, or is it going to settle in for a while?
Well, this is going to be a fairly slow moving storm. It's not like we're getting a storm that's going to last for like 3 days or anything like that. But you know, the fact that we're looking at upwards of a foot of snow, possibly a foot and a half, is pretty good evidence that there's going to be a fairly slow progression of the center of this thing out of the south central plains, heading toward the Ohio Valley, toward Lake Erie, as this first half of the week goes on. And along with that, there's obviously plenty of moisture that's being dragged northward out of the Gulf of Mexico into the beltline of the country. In warmer air, we're going to see some locally heavy rainfall. There are already flash flood warnings that are in effect in parts of south central Missouri, and there could be some pretty heavy rain in the northern delta, Missouri Boot Heel into the lower Ohio Valley. There's a lot of fairly wet, wintry conditions with this precipitation, and there's going to be possibly a little bit of soil moisture profile recharge that we see because of this kind of moisture that's coming on, because obviously we know that there hasn't been a whole lot of real hard freeze conditions for the soil, considering how warm it's been so far this month of January.
Well, it's been a mild winter for the most part so far, but we'd been hearing that it was going to be probably a little different in the latter half of this winter. Does this signal the change that is taking place? For the rest of the winter, you see a more active pattern like this now?
Well, I think it certainly has that potential, because behind this batch of snow that we're getting right now in the Midwest and in the Central Plains, you get farther to the west, and there's more energy coming in out of the Pacific coast into the interior west. Much of California, the entire Great Basin, into the desert southwest, and the Four Corners have either winter weather advisories or winter storm warnings with some possibly heavy snow in not only the mountain areas, but some lower elevations as well. So it is going to be a more active week, and this is, frankly, this is what we're going to need to see for areas of the Western Corn Belt in terms of offering some potential for soil moisture improvement. We know that there's drought conditions that basically start, just a little ways west of Des Moines, Iowa, for extreme drought, and extend all the way west, clear to central California practically. So there's there's a lot of country that's quite dry, and any kind of moisture that has any sort of chance at infiltrating into the soil moisture profile is, I think, going to be pretty necessary when you think about what things are going to be like to set up for this coming spring.
And as you pointed out, with the mild conditions so far, the ground not frozen hard in many places, so more accepting to this moisture as well. We're talking with DTM meteorologist Bryce Anderson. All right, Bryce, what about the weather in South America?
It's still looking quite favorable, Mike. We saw that over the last 10 days in Argentina that the rainfall pattern showed a notable improvement. And last week, the Buenos Aires Grain Exchange reduced its poor crop rating for both corn and soybeans by half, from, I want to say, about right around 15 to 20% to more or less around 10%. The numbers aren't quite exact, but it's in that ballpark. And we could see some further easing of real stressful conditions in a later report this week, the weekly summary that they put out, because the rainfall has been better. Now, I'm not saying that Argentina is going to suddenly turn around and have a record crop, but, there have been concerns that there are going to be steadily reduced crop estimates out of Argentina, and that appears to have been kind of taken off the board. So that's been a better situation, and they've got another, inch and a half to 3 inches of rain in the forecast for the next 7 days. Now in Brazil, still looking pretty mild, 2 to 4 inches of precip from Mato Grosso South to Rio Grande do Sul. That's useful moisture. The only weather issue immediately that we might see with this rain is an interruption of harvest progress in Mato Grosso, because they are at a slow start to harvest relative to average. And so heavier rainfall obviously could slow them down a little bit. But I think that at this point, you still have to look at the rain as offering more benefit than it is going to be an impediment to harvest from that standpoint.
So more moisture for both South America and here in the U.S. How does that fit into the La Nina pattern?
The scenario is a little bit contrary to a typical La Nina effect, especially in regard to Argentina. Now, we know that La Nina is still going on in the Pacific, but it does appear that this event has reached its most intense value, both in terms of the sea surface temperatures and in the atmospheric indication from the Southern Oscillation Index.
And so with that in mind, there maybe is a little bit of an easing in terms of the La Nina thumbprint on the weather pattern in South America. And if that's the case, well, then my expectation would be that we see either further improvement or at least a less threatening weather picture for southern Brazil and Argentina going through the end of the month and then on into February.
So that's quite a change from what we had been hearing about La Nina and what was building. I mean, all these dry weather concerns, at least for the time being, seem to be kind of dialed back a bit.
Well, they are, and again, I think the takeaway for me is that there has been a reduction in the crop size in Argentina, and there has been a reduction, actually, in Brazil crop estimates also. However, the Brazil acreage number was still quite large for its soybean crop, and with this better scenario that we're seeing, Brazil is still on track to have a record soybean crop. And like I say, the estimates in Argentina are likely to not have further reduction in the crop size. So there's, you know, there's been some damage, if you will, but it doesn't look like we're steadily going to be just, clipping off more production. The way things have seemed to have kind of leveled out on the moisture scene in that part of the world.
Interesting. So kind of a change in developments there. We'll keep a close watch on it. Bryce, as always, thanks for the update. We appreciate it.
You're welcome, Mike. Good to talk to you.
All right. Take care. DTM meteorologist Bryce Anderson. So the weather picture changing a bit for both U.S. and South America with more moisture in both places. So we'll keep a close watch on that. Well, a lot to talk about with our next guest, Iowa Senator Charles Grassley. A lot going on right now, the change in Washington, D.C. Will there be an impeachment trial? What about getting a COVID package passed, another one? What can this Congress and the Biden administration get accomplished here early on in this session? Can they pass some major legislation, or is everything going to get bogged down with impeachment and other things? We'll get the thoughts and perspectives of Iowa Senator Charles Grassley, and we'll talk, of course, the biofuels issue as well. All that coming up next. Stay with us. You're listening to AOA, Adams on Agriculture. Hi, this is Mike Adams. You're listening to AOA, Adams on Agriculture. Don't go away. More Adams on Agriculture coming right up.
Through the years, you've really kept up with the times. You're on social media.
Like, dislike, block.
Maintained your health.
10,000 steps. I'm a beast.
You even programmed your own smart home.
In 10 minutes, remind me that I'm a genius.
In 10 minutes, I'll remind you that you're a genius.
If you can do all that, you can definitely save for retirement. Just go to aceyourretirement.org, a free online tool sponsored by AARP that can help you get on track with your retirement savings no matter your age. At aceyourretirement.org, you'll meet Avo, the friendly digital retirement coach, and in just 3 minutes, get personalized recommendations to help boost your retirement savings. They're easy to understand and work with your lifestyle. It's quick, easy, and free. Plus, it's brought to you by AARP, so you know they got your back.
You are a genius.
Take charge of your retirement. Go to aceyourretirement.org now. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
You're listening to Adams on Agriculture for the American Ag Network. I'm Kirsten Rall with a market check here on this Monday. Grain futures are higher across the board. The stabilization is encouraging considering the heavy selling pressure witnessed across the ag space. March corn is trading 8 1/2 higher at 5.09 1/2. The May contract up 7 3/4 at 5.10 3/4. March soybeans trading 26 1/2 higher at 13.38 1/2. The May contract up 24 3/4 at 13.36 1/4. Looking at the wheats, March Chicago wheat trading 8 1/2 higher at 6.42 3/4, Kansas City wheat March up 4 1/2 at 6.17 3/4, Minneapolis spring wheat March up 3 1/2 at 6.16, the May contract up 3 3/4 at 6.25 1/4. Following limit moves higher in feeder cattle Friday, due to the tumbling grain prices, traders are faced with mixed market uncertainty following a bearish cattle on feed report. With live cattle and feeder cattle enabling expanded trading limits, Monday's livestock markets could be in for a volatile day. On the Board of Trade, April lean hogs trading 5 cents lower at 76.10, the May contract down 6 at 80.47. Looking at feeder cattle futures, the March contract down $1.62 at 142.50, the April contract down $1.50 at 144.62. February live cattle down 42 at 116.30, the April contract down 15 at 122.37. In cash cattle country, the bulk of last week's business took place on Wednesday and Thursday. Southern live trade ranged from $108 to $111 per hundredweight. Northern dress deals ranged from $166 to $176 per hundredweight. In the outside markets, the Dow is down 188 points, the NASDAQ composite up 170, the S&P 500 up 8. You're listening to Adams on Agriculture for the American Ag Network. I'm Kirsten Rall.
Hey, Dad. Your prescription will be ready in just a minute. Hey, Dad, your laundry will be ready in just a minute. Dad, your lunch will be ready in just a minute.
Hey, honey, why don't you take a minute?
When you help care for a loved one, you give them as much time as you can, making sure they're safe and comfortable. But it's just as important that you take some time for yourself. At AARP, we can help with information and useful tips on how you can maintain a healthy life balance, care for your own physical and mental well-being, and manage the challenges of caring for a loved one. Because the better care you take of yourself, the better care you can provide for your loved one.
Thanks, Dad.
Thank you. You're there for them. We're here for you. Find free care guides to support you and your loved one at aarp.org/caregiving. That's aarp.org/caregiving. A public service announcement brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
Hi, this is Mike Adams. Thanks for listening to Adams on Agriculture. Join me Monday through Friday for the latest farm and agriculture news from around the world.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need to know. Adams on Agriculture. Now, back to Mike Adams.
Last time we talked with Senator Grassley, it was before the election, so a lot has changed since that last conversation. Senator, thank you for joining us. Appreciate your time.
Yeah, I'm glad to be with you anytime you want me.
All right, your thoughts. Let's start with the big news. Will there be an impeachment trial in the Senate?
Yes, starting February the 8th.
Your thoughts on that trial?
Well, my thoughts are that I'm a juror, and I shouldn't give any judgment on anything until I hear all the facts. So that's where it is. I kind of feel that there is a constitutional question that I can comment on, because the Constitution talks about impeachment of a president or anybody else for removal from office. And so he is not president of the United States. He's a citizen of the United States now. So I would question the constitutionality of it. Also, I think that it's legitimate to say that if he has done something wrong, now that he's not president of the United States, he can be charged with almost anything a prosecutor thinks that he's done to violate the law. I'm not advocating that, but that could happen even if he were president of the United States and impeached and found guilty. He could still be charged accordingly. So as a citizen, he can likewise be charged accordingly.
So you say there will be a trial. The question is, we'll wait and see how that plays out. But does this Congress... Yeah. And this new administration, are you able to get anything done until that's over?
Well, there's 2 weeks. The answer is no, you can't get anything done until it's over, because the law requires that we meet every day except Sunday, starting at 1 and going as long as we want to go, but no other business can be conducted.
Wow. So that certainly delays the the administration's plans as well as any agenda you might have in Congress. So what about a COVID package? Yeah. That means it gets put on hold too?
It can be worked on behind the scenes, but I don't think there can be any official work done. Maybe with what we call unanimous consent, something could be done, but getting 100 senators all going in the same direction on that is pretty difficult as far as I'm concerned. Now, don't forget, I said the trial starts February 8th. That's 2 weeks between now and then, so I think we got plenty of time to get the president's cabinet seated.
Yeah, that's a big part of it. And when do you expect any action on Tom Vilsack?
There's no date set. He has asked if I would introduce him to the United States Senate Committee on Agriculture. I will do that. I did that the last time that he was appointed Secretary of Agriculture. I'm very happy with Biden selecting Vilsack, not meaning that I agree with everything Vilsack might do or have to do because it's a Biden program, but I do have appreciation that he's a free trader. I have appreciation that as both governor and Secretary of Agriculture, he understands the role of the family farm in our agricultural economy, which is the most important institution for the production of food in the world and the most efficient. So I appreciate that, and I think he's done a good job on civil rights within the Department of Justice, and there was some wrong done to some parts of our population that wasn't appropriated, and I think he fought that accordingly. I think he's got a good sense of what environmental law is legitimate or not legitimate in our agricultural economy. And I think he has a good understanding of the importance of biofuels in the agricultural economy, and having a strong voice for that will be very helpful.
We're talking with Iowa Senator Charles Grassley. What are your thoughts on some of these executive orders signed by President Biden here early on in his administration?
Yeah. Well, you know how important energy is to agriculture, and shutting down the XL pipeline is not only going to hurt 1,000 people that are already laid off as a result of it. There was 18,000 construction jobs involved with it that will be harmed. And also shutting down fracking on government land is going to drive up the price of energy. So I don't like that. Those are the only things so far that I think apply directly to agriculture.
You talked about biofuels. You were critical of the Trump EPA's handling of the RFS. Are you more optimistic about a Biden administration's approach to handling these biofuels issues?
Let me give you two sides of that. One would be the nominee, Reagan, from the North Carolina Environmental Protection Agency, now being federal EPA. The president of the American Farm Bureau Federation spoke highly of his understanding of agriculture and fairness to agriculture. So that would be a positive for me. A negative for me would be the fact that he, before he went to North Carolina, he was very active in the natural, I forget what the name of the National Defense Resource Council or something like that, that's very pro-environmental and doesn't particularly care about any segment of the economy. If they go after it, they want to go after it. So that would give me some question of whether or not the American Farm Bureau person has a good judgment of him. But I have to reserve judgment until we have the hearing and find out what he actually says, and that'll probably be later on not even in the next 2 weeks, I would guess. But it could be scheduled for the Environmental Committee to go on, but I'm not on that committee, so I don't know for sure where his nomination is.
Do you think that you can come together in Congress and with the administration get something passed, like infrastructure? There's talk about immigration. That would seem to be a heavier lift, but something like infrastructure. I thought when that didn't happen 4 years ago, it kind of set the tone in a negative way moving forward, and now maybe the impeachment trial sets the tone for this administration and Congress. I don't know, but maybe something positive like an infrastructure bill. Do you see that happening?
Yeah. It probably has, going into it, more bipartisan support than anything else. But don't forget, it had that same bipartisan mm-hmm. support and even a President Trump in favor of it, and nothing moved. Even a relatively small infrastructure bill dealing with highways got out of committee in a unanimous vote, which obviously is fully bipartisan, but never got anyplace else because we couldn't decide a bipartisan way of funding it.
Yeah, I was surprised it didn't get done 4 years ago. I guess now I'd be surprised if it does get done. Your thoughts on dealing in the Senate now with this 50-50 split, and of course, the vice president would have the tie-breaking vote, but just how things are going to be in this new structure of the Senate. What do you see ahead?
Well, if we retain the 60-vote margin to stop debate with a 50-50 Senate, nothing's going to get done that isn't bipartisan. But don't forget, things do get done in the United States Senate, and it's the only place where we force compromise, because in the House of Representatives, the majority party, as long as it sticks together, can ignore the minority. You can't do that in the United States Senate. So if people want compromise, the United States Senate is the place to get it. Now, if the Democrats do what we call the nuclear option and reduce that 60% down to 51, then we'll probably have more partisanship. There's plenty of partisanship coming out of the House of Representatives. If you like bipartisanship, it has to happen in the United States Senate. But don't forget, the United States Senate is where you get compromise between rural and urban. If you do everything according to like in the House of Representatives, a few states, if they stick together because they're urban, they can ignore even the rural areas of America. It can't be ignored in the United States Senate.
Critical time for our country. Senator, we appreciate your time. We'll be watching closely and look forward to talking with you again next month.
Thank you very much. Goodbye.
Take care. Okay. Iowa Senator Charles Grassley. Yeah, what happens with the filibuster? What happens with this impeachment trial? Can they move other legislation? How do they handle this 50-50 split? So many things up in the air. It's a whole different political world now than it was just a short time ago. So we'll see how all this plays out. Coming up next, what about these markets? Wild ride. We've got all kinds of factors. We heard about the improved weather in South America. We've got a lot of talk about here in this country what production might be this coming year. What about this stocks-to-use ratio? We'll talk about all that with Matt Bennett with AgMarket.net next on AOA. Hi, this is Mike Adams. You're listening to AOA, Adams on Agriculture. Don't go away. More Adams on Agriculture coming right up.
The Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council present the story of Cynthia and Ed.
My mother was always very active and independent, and she was familiar with her neighborhood. But one day, out of the blue, she stopped at the stop sign for much longer than usual. And she didn't know whether she should go forward or turn or just stay at the stop sign. She wasn't even really sure where she was at. She was very concerned. It was very unsettling for her.
It's important for you to talk to someone about it, to bring the family in on it. I felt so much better after my son told me, Mom, I don't want you to worry or be afraid. I'll be there for you, and we'll figure it out.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Wake up and text. Text and eat. Text and catch the bus. Text and miss your stop.
Wait.
Text and be late to work.
Sorry, I'm late.
Text and work. Text and pretend to work. Text and act surprised when someone calls you out for not working.
Who, me?
Text and meet up with a friend you haven't seen in forever.
Hi.
Oh, hey.
Text and complain that they're on their phone the whole time. Text and listen to them complain that you're on your phone the whole time.
Ugh.
Text and whatever. But when you get behind the wheel, give your phone to a passenger. Put it in the glove box. Just don't text and drive. Visit StopTextsStopWrecks.org. A public service announcement brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
What kitchen gadget is so essential to food safety that no home should be without it? I'm registered dietitian nutritionist Toby Smithson. A food thermometer isn't just for meat and poultry. It will help you avoid food poisoning from egg dishes, casseroles, and leftovers by ensuring they're fully cooked by reaching a safe minimum internal temperature. Heat leftovers and casseroles to at least 165 degrees and egg dishes to at least 160 degrees. You'll find more food safety tips at homefoodsafety.org.
Adams on Agriculture prides itself on bringing top leaders in the ag industry right to your radio speakers. AOA wants to continue that conversation right to your fingertips. Follow AOA on Twitter at @AOA_talkshow and Mike Adams himself at the handle Mike Adams Ag. You will receive real-time highlights of the show and keep up with which convention or industry meeting AOA is attending. That's AOA_talkshow and Mike Adams Ag. We hope to see you online.
Carbon monoxide is a colorless, odorless gas that can be fatal. Don't use anything indoors that burns fuel, such as gasoline-powered generators, camp stoves and lanterns, or charcoal grills. Opening doors and windows or using fans isn't enough. Have your vents and chimneys checked to make sure water heater and gas furnace exhausts aren't blocked. If you feel sick, dizzy, or weak while using a generator, get to fresh air right away. From the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency.
Recently on Adams on Agriculture, joining us now is Floyd Vergara. He is Director of State Governmental Affairs for the National Biodiesel Board. We've had a lot of discussion this week about where biodiesel fits into the push for climate policy and the changes that may be taking place with the new administration and the new Congress going in that direction. Carbon reduction is certainly a big area of emphasis.
The state carbon reduction policies are just growing by leaps and bounds. Starting in 2009, you had basically one state with a comprehensive economy-wide carbon reduction target, and that was California. 5 years afterwards, you had the Northeast, and then now you have about half of the country in terms of the state with comprehensive economy-wide carbon reduction goals. Those goals tend to be along the lines of 40% reduction by 2030 and 80% reduction by 2050.
For the information important to rural America, join us on Adams on Agriculture.
Adams on Agriculture. Conversations with policymakers, the movers and shakers in the ag industry, the pros and cons of issues important to you, cutting through the spin to get to the heart of a topic and giving you the information you need to know. Every weekday, Mike Adams brings you guests important to the ag industry. It's quite simply information farmers and ranchers need to know. Adams on Agriculture.
You're listening to AOA, Adams on Agriculture. Hi, this is Mike Adams. You can rely on us for the latest farm and ranch news from around the world.
Information America's farmers and ranchers need to know. Adams on Agriculture. Now, back to Mike Adams.
All right, let's talk markets with Matt Bennett with AgMarket.net. How are you, Matt?
I'm doing great. How are you doing?
Hey, these markets are not for the faint of heart, are they?
No. I'll tell you what, it's a little more fun to talk markets here on Monday than what we what we had to deal with on Friday. Very interesting trade on Friday. You know, you had really good export sales and, you know, no real major news whatsoever, but the market reacted poorly on good news. You know, I think that the market just did everything it could to find as many sell stops as we could find, and it catapulted out of control. You start out this week, though, and I think the reality of the situation is that not much has changed, and we're still looking at a very tight situation. So I do think there's a lot of people out here that were wanting to get into the market that decided that they better go ahead and do it early in the week rather than later.
So we're kind of in this situation. Anytime they go down, the markets go down at all, people start saying, is this it? Is it going to fall apart? And that's kind of where we were Friday. And you said then, now you start off the week, things look different.
Yeah, they definitely look a little different. I mean, in all reality, you know, weather in South America is still pretty decent. I mean, yeah, there's a dry pocket here and there. But overall, they're in pretty good shape. But you got to remember here in the U.S., we had really good export sales, like I said last week, plus some surprise announcements in the mornings. You know, and so export sales should be really solid again this week. You know, on beans right now, you're looking at a 3.1% stocks-to-use ratio. You know, on corn, you're above 10. But regardless, I've got to think that exports could be adjusted higher by maybe even 200 million bushels for corn here in February. Whereas on soybeans, they about almost have to make some sort of adjustment to exports. And so I would think that your carryout levels are going to tighten up for both corn and beans. And I feel like a lot of folks in the trade agree with me on that.
So it's kind of interesting, more moisture for South America, now some more moisture for the U.S. Do we start kind of, for the time being, pull back from some of those dry weather concerns in both places?
Yeah, I think potentially. I mean, you know, there's no doubt that we're going to need, you know, a couple of really good systems to move through as far as we're concerned. And I do think that there's a lot of concern that we start out that dry, and sometimes it's kind of hard to reverse that trend. But like I said, a couple systems make a big difference. As far as Brazil's concerned, we all know that second crop, you know, it's yet to be planted. Most of it's going to be planted here in the next 6 to 8 weeks, but bottom line is you go into that period a little bit dry, and I think there's going to be concerns. Plus, a lot of the safrinha crop's going to go in the ground a little bit late. So as far as weather's concerned, we've got quite a bit more time, but it sure looks like they're going to finish up their first crop in better shape than maybe what we might have thought 3 or 4 weeks ago. And as far as Argentina's concerned, yeah, I do think there's going to be some crop losses there because they had some pretty extreme weather. But at the same time, I think that this rain has quelled those fears just a little bit. And I think they're in better shape now than what they've been in for most of their growing season.
What's your sense, talking with farmers, of what's been sold and what they're still hanging on to?
Yeah, I don't know that there's much. I just don't think there's many beans out there to be purchased. As far as old crop beans go, there's just a complete lack of them available in the countryside anyway. Some of the elevators are still going to be holding on to some ownership. As far as corn's concerned, I think a fair amount of corn actually has been sold over the last 3 or 4 weeks, which is nice to see. But a lot of the corn that's been delivered to the elevator, I think, has been contracted corn. So there's still going to be a lot of corn in the bin at home that producers are going to be tight-fisted with. My belief is that that corn is going to be really good property moving forward. Now, how long does a guy want to tempt fate there, and how much percentage you want to hold on to is the big question. The thing is, you had a huge down day there on Friday, whereas you still could have sold corn or beans after Friday's downfall, better prices than what you've seen the last 7 or 8 years, you know, other than these last couple 3 weeks. So you got to keep that in the back of your mind. And so I think a producer needs to be moving, you know, on some of these sales, at least on percentage levels. You don't have to get super carried away. I do want to hold on to some crop into the summer time frame, though, because, you know, or at least late spring time frame, because I really think basis could absolutely catch fire later on.
How about going ahead and selling new crop?
I think new crop sales make pretty good sense. You know, November beans here this morning back up to 1127 as we talk, you know, and then these corn 435. I think you get back up into that 445 to 450 range, and I'm probably going to be willing to look at another sale in here. But yeah, either way, both of those price levels are pretty exciting, and I think it's nice to see those going closer to February 1 because those crop insurance prices are going to have a big impact on what our bottom line is going to be this year and how well we're going to be able to sleep at night knowing what our revenue guarantees are. So I think selling some of your insured bushels makes sense, especially whenever we're this profitable.
And, of course, how much more shopping is China going to do from us?
You know, I think China, whenever they release information that moves the market lower, you always have to be aware that they're probably going to be purchasing sometime soon. And I think that's probably what you're going to see here this week. Now, they are coming into their Lunar Year holiday, and typically there's no purchases made during that time period. But, you know, I think that the Chinese are certainly they're expanding their hog production as rapidly as what they can. And so their needs are just astronomical. I do think that they also whittled their corn reserves down much lower than the USDA knows or is divulging. It's hard to get information out of there, so I don't begrudge them. I just don't think that China's got near as much corn as what we've got on the world ledger right now, and I think that their purchases on both corn and beans and really any protein would prove that fact as well.
Yep, always hard to get that information, accurate information out of China for sure. All right, any winter weather in eastern Illinois yet?
You know, we had some ice here this morning in my part of the world, and it kind of just turned to rain. Certainly not the best conditions for traveling, but it's nice to get the moisture as well.
That's for sure. All right, take care, Matt. Good to talk with you. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, hey, thanks for having me, bud.
Matt Bennett with AgMarket.net. All right, that wraps it up for today. Another week off and running. Thanks for being with us. Stay safe, everyone. Hope you'll join us again tomorrow right here on AOA. Hi, this is Mike Adams. Thanks for listening to Adams on Agriculture. Join me Monday through Friday for the latest farm and agriculture news from around the world.